What's good, everybody? Thursday morning, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Pete Jensen here with you, joined by Sportsnet's Nick Alberga, who's hopping on the program today. What's going on, Nick? Great to catch up with you.
Not too much. Great to be with you. I feel come see, come sock today. I think we're going to use this as a therapy session for Darcy Kemper owners out there, okay?
I want to touch on a lot of fan questions today that are geared towards buy low candidates or geared towards should I drop this underachieving player. Of course, one underachieving player this year in the save percentage category that we all had high hopes for was Darcy Kemper, and he got banged up at the morning skate yesterday, didn't play in the game. Jonas Johansson gave up 8 goals at the Toronto Maple Leafs. So the Colorado Avalanche, as of Thursday morning, Nick, officially have a goaltending problem because yes, Kemper is injured, as a lot of people expected he would be at one point or another.
Well, that's exactly it, right? And we talked about it all offseason long. It seemed like, you know, what's a good placement in your draft for Darcy Kemper? And I'm as guilty as anybody else, Pete. Like, I took this guy in the third round. I just knew it. I knew it, and I went to that well. Contract year, Darcy Kemper. I believed in him. We don't know the extent of the injury just yet, but they're calling it upper body. Our boy Pavel Francouz has a legit shot here. I know he's, I believe, down in the American Hockey League rehabbing from an injury he sustained in training camp. So that's fortunate news. But I put out the numbers yesterday on Jonas Johansson. 4 or more goals in 10 of 27 NHL appearances. This guy's not an NHL goalie. And I think if you need a replacement option, I'm not sure you're looking at him when it comes to Kemper replacement options, right?
Definitely not. I mean, I think he had won his 2 prior games, yeah, but it's one of those things where it's a product of the team. Obviously, he has a good opportunity here if he's going to provide anything close to stable goaltending, but we've seen some bad outings from him ever since he joined the Avalanche last year before the trade deadline. When you look at Francouz, I mean, I guess the problem I have with him is he hasn't been healthy for like a season and a half now. He's 13% rostered in Yahoo Fantasy, coming off long-term IR. If you want to take that risk, of course, the Avs are one of the top 5 teams in the league. I couldn't blame anybody for stashing him right now. I would do that if he was available in one of my leagues. The problem is the Avs ceiling, the Avs expectations are to win the Stanley Cup, to finally break through this year. And when I say they have a goaltending problem, I think that they have to address this thing at some point in the next couple of months, whether it's Marc-Andre Fleury, who's in a contract here, whether it's a buy low option somewhere around the league, like Matt Murray, maybe that's a little bit of a risk, but there's a whole spectrum of goalies that they could consider trading for. You wonder who would do business with them in terms of like being in the same conference. Like, you think of the Dallas Stars, right? Having a surplus of goalies. But I don't think that those two teams would trade with each other at such an important position, especially that Dallas is playing so well. And they might meet up again in the playoffs being in the same division. So these are all conversations that we can continue to have over the next couple of weeks and months, regardless of how serious Kemper's injury is. But it's just, I think that there is going to be an outside option coming in at some point. So therefore, I wouldn't get my hopes up too big about Pavel Francouz.
Nick, Joe Sakic's worst nightmare has happened, right? You go into the season and you say, I made the decision to go with Kemper. He's got an injury history. He's got to stay healthy. He's going to have to get another goaltender. Where does he go, Nick? What do you think here?
Well, the thing is like they struck out big time in the offseason, right, guys? Like they wanted Philip Grubauer to come back. And then, well, the Kraken backed up the Brinks truck. So he went to Seattle. And then like the next option fell off the map. And then they were sort of stuck, like not stuck, but Darcy Kemper has been relatively unproven, right? Like he's never really been, with all due respect, Arizona on a legitimate team. And he's got the injury history. So, you know, that brings up the question. I don't think this is an overreaction, because Pete and Bob, like, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, this is an imperative time for this organization. I think they're built to win the Stanley Cup. They have unbelievable depth on the back end. Nazem Kadri is having an unbelievable contract year. You have to seize the moment. So realistically, like, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury's name comes to mind, and we'll see if he wants to move again. I think Jonas Korpisalo will be out there for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Names like that, and you mentioned it, Dallas has 17 goalies on their roster, but I'm not sure they're going to be quick to make a deal here with the Colorado Avalanche. But to me, like, I didn't feel like it was an overreaction when I started to siege a bit, when Darcy Kemper and that news came out. I'm like, here we go again, you know, and especially considering Pete, where I drafted this guy in my league, I was very, very unhappy. We'll put it that way.
Right. Thankfully, I took Robin Leonard ahead of him in the early rounds. I think it was either the second or third round. He hasn't been a whole lot better, and Vegas has some problems. Yeah. I mean, I think that like Vegas is having their problems. A lot of these elite teams are hitting bumps in the road at one point or another, right, Nick? So we even saw it from the Florida Panthers dropping a game to the Seattle Kraken the other day. Your mantra of fade the Kraken, I guess, didn't work out that day. But
no.
yeah, some wacky things happening right now. But I think people who have Kemper regret picking him because he has a 903 save percentage, which is what I was mentioning earlier. Even when he has been healthy, it's one of those guys you just keep in the top 10 goalie rankings each week, kind of anticipating a turnaround. But now the injury comes at the wrong time. So the Maple Leafs took full advantage of them. And one guy that we mentioned on the previous show, Michael Bunting, had a big night last night. So I think there's even more credibility to going out and picking up that guy. But anything you saw last night that caught your eye around the league, just to kick things off here?
Well, plenty. By the way, I thought it was a tremendous night of NHL hockey, which is rare to see on a Wednesday. Usually it's a small card, and it was a smaller card, but the matchups were outstanding. I wanted to pimp Michael Bunting, so I'm happy you went there. Last I checked, around 25% ownership. Well, he's on fire, and surprisingly enough, Austin Matthews is on fire. 12 goals in the last 15 games. So Bunting is playing on the top line with Marner and Matthews. He has 2 goals, 7 assists, 9 points over a 5-game point streak. And I'll ask you this, like, do you think it's must own territory right now, the way Austin Matthews is producing, whether it be 5-on-5 or at, you know, the power play, that Michael Bunting should be on your roster right now? Because I am trending that way, the way he's looked the last little while. 3 assists last night, and he'll chip in with some penalty minutes and hits too, which I think is integral, right?
Right. I was going to mention he has 26 hits this year, which is better than a hit per game. So really impressive in the category coverage department. And yeah, you look at the Maple Leafs, they're one of the best. I mean, they're a regular season team. They're going to have a
they're going to be
even last year when they ended up losing again in the first round and blowing a 3-1 series lead. Was there any more consistent regular season team than the Toronto Maple Leafs last year? Not really. So maybe there were a couple other teams, but I can't think of one that was more consistent last year. So this team is built for the regular season. Whether they get over the hump in the playoffs is anybody's guess. But yes, I would consider Bunting a must-add player. We talked about him on the network the other day. He was 14% rostered. Now he's 26% rostered. Give him another multi-point game and he'll be 50% rostered. And then the rest will be history. So yeah, our one of our guests from the offseason, Mike Kelly, was really high on him as a breakout candidate. Wanted to give him a shout out for that. He was top 10 in goals per 60, I think minimum 20 games last year. So with the Coyotes, who were a terrible team. So now he's the sidekick on one of the elite lines in the league.
26-year-old rookie Michael Bunting. Do not forget that, which leads me to the next conversation, Pete. And it's something we're going to talk about all season long, right? Like the Calder race. I understand right now it goes through Motown and I get it. You know, Raymond and Sider have been fantastic. I thought they were excellent last night against Seattle. I think you're back to fading the Kraken, by the way, after losing to Detroit, but that's a story for another day. Bunting is easing himself into that conversation. And I'm sure you caught the late game too. Guys, Trevor Zegras, he's arrived. It took a while. Getzlaf's out of that lineup right now. Watch out for Trevor Zegras in the race for the Calder. And people always get on me on social media. Why are you talking about awards in December? I don't care what you think. I'm going to talk about awards in the first week of the season if I want to, Pete.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most fun parts about the show, right? To look at the futures market and track it. And like you said, Zegras came in. He was my Calder pick at the beginning of the season over Caulfield, over Spencer Knight. Yeah. I didn't think it was that bold at the time. But certainly now, if you're going to say that Zegras is going to come back and pass one of those Detroit guys, which actually includes Alex Nedeljkovic because he's rookie eligible and he's been on a tear lately. He's the best rookie goalie by a good margin right now in the whole league. So you look at him plus Sider plus Raymond, who's just been a horse lately. And then, you know, Zegras is next after those guys. So Zegras has 12 points in his past 9 games, couple of multi-point games over that stretch. I'm grateful that earlier in the year when he had a good shot volume, but then I cut the cord on him in my keeper league, where I probably won't end up keeping him, but maybe if he explodes, I would. But I picked him up the day after I dropped him because he had a multi-point game. So I got right back on the hype train. And I'm certainly glad that I did, because ever since, he has been a beast for the Anaheim Ducks, who just beat the Golden Knights, right? The Ducks, I think, are for real. Their offense is crazy deep this year, Nick.
Well, that was on the back-to-back, too, and Anthony Stolar is the backup starting that game. Like, right. The money suggested and everything was trending towards Vegas. I had Vegas on the puck line in that game, guys. And, Bob, I'm sure you did, too, right?
I took Vegas in regulation, and I look up, it's like 4-1.
Why?
And I'm thinking to myself, I got Stolar's in net. I mean, that's a bad loss if you're Vegas. I know Anaheim's a better team, and I know Vegas has been a little shaky up and down. Lehner has not been fantastic. There's some questions that we'll go through today.
Yeah.
You know, people saying, should we move on from Lehner? I don't think so. But yeah, it was that was disappointing as a Vegas backer.
I'm sure you saw my statistic on social media, guys, and this is a telling sign as to why Anaheim's finding this success. So last season, they had 18 goals all season long from a D. They're at 19 thanks to last night already. This to me probably has been a top three story of this season period, is the Anaheim Ducks, because I had them projected to be in the Shane Wright conversation. You know, my boy Rico was on waivers last year. Adam Henrique, he's having a fantastic season across the board. Like, even contract year Ricard Raquel, contract year Josh Manson was a beast last night. John Gibson's been excellent. I think people continue to sleep on the Anaheim Ducks, which we've seen sort of betting point of view the last little while. But I'm sold on them, guys. They're really, really impressive. And they've been waiting a while for this next wave to take that next ride, and they have.
A really shocking thing is that they've rattled off wins against the rival Kings, against the Golden Knights, after their captain, Ryan Getzlaf, got injured in the game two nights ago. So they've actually accomplished what they have the past two nights on the back-to-back, scoring a ton of goals in both games without Ryan Getzlaf for the vast majority of those games. So, I mean, I think the depth of this team has been tested so far. You saw Raquel miss some time. Now you might see Getzlaf miss some time, but Getzlaf is like, you know, he's the old guard there. I mean, Troy Terry's their most valuable player. They have nine players in our top 200 rankings, which you can find on NHL.com/fantasy. So they got Terry at 65, Zegras at 90, but Zegras is coming up fast. He might pass Terry very soon, to be honest. Then you got Getzlaf day to day, John Gibson, your guy Rico, Henrique, Cam Fowler and Shattenkirk, Raquel, and Sonny Milano, who plays
the mob with, boss.
I mean, he's a Long Island guy too. So we love him for that as well. But he's in at the very end of our top 200, Sonny Milano, with I think 16 points in 19 games this year. So even good old Sonny from the island is going to be worth rostering the rest of the way, playing with Zegras and Raquel.
Sonny Milano, that is a top five NHL name right there. All Sonny hanging out at the pizza parlor, South Shore of Long Island, Nick. I love it.
The Jersey Shore. No,
he's from Massapequa, so he's probably hanging out at All American a little bit, Bobby.
Oh, baby, we got to get Nick to All American Burger out in Long Island. You could have the best burger in Canada, Nick. All American, Massapequa, New York, or wherever it is, Merrick, New York, Long Island. Wow. Okay, let's get back to the hockey.
In 5 years from now, I'll come down there after the 17 variant has made its way through this continent, guys. I got to touch, you know, you talked, Bobby, before it went on about venting. I need to vent. And again, I'm using this as a therapy session today. The Philadelphia Flyers, period. Is the era over? Because, like, you guys know, I was big on Carter Hart coming into this season. You know, watching that game last night, and the Rangers have been masked by tremendous goaltending, at least in my opinion. They're a good team. Gerard Gallant's done a good job. But Philadelphia, the way they were flying the zone and leaving their goalie out to dry, like, it's so easy to blame Carter Hart. I think for the most part, obviously, he's been much better this season. But I'm so out on Philadelphia. I have no clue what to do with any of those files. Joel Farabee gets hurt last night. They're a mess, Pete. They're an absolute zoo defensively. Like, I felt bad for Carter Hart watching that game last night because they were flying the zone like crazy. I just don't know what they do.
Yeah, I felt bad for him last year when the defense hung him out to dry almost every night of the week. And then here now he has actually turned it around. Like you said, he has a 919 save percentage on the season, but that team is in a total tailspin. I do believe the Islanders will catch them eventually in the standings. The Islanders are back in action on Thursday. That's good to see as their bounce back run, you know, hopefully begins for their sake. A terrible start, but yeah, the Flyers are the worst team in that division. I don't think anybody can convince me of otherwise. I was low on them in the preseason. I know you were higher on them than me.
Yeah,
I guess we tried to convince you, but you know, Philly does that. I was high on Philly like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and they, you know, they looked like they maybe would get to the conference final, but they couldn't. They couldn't score in that series, and now Giroux is in the contract year, and there's kind of a turning point here, I think, for Philly going into the wrong direction. So yeah, it's unfortunate, right? Even a guy like Provorov. Couple of years ago, you thought he was going to be like one of the Norris contenders for until the end of time, and now he's barely fantasy relevant. So, and Farabee was one of my favorite deep sleepers this year. He's just way too inconsistent, but still very young. So, yeah, and it hurts for a guy like Couturier, because Couturier has been just plummeting week after week, here and there, dropping 5 spots, 10 spots in our rankings. And I don't know what to tell you, right? Like, Couturier, there are a lot better options out there from different divisions that you could pick up to replace a guy like him.
Yeah, it's scary all around for that team. They continue to get lit up. You know, Chuck Fletcher, the GM, talks to the media the other day, and you think there's going to be sort of a burn of the saddle, and then they come out with that type of effort. The Ristolainen trade has to be one of the worst trades I've seen in the last, you know, recent memory, and that's all due respect to Chuck Fletcher. He's, you know, good GM, done a lot in this league, but I don't know. The more I watch Ristolainen, the more I wonder, where's the Rasmus Ristolainen who dominated the World Juniors for Finland? Like, he has been zapped of all his confidence. And, you know, for many of you out there who play NHL, he's like a drone at times, you know, in the NHL game series where you don't know where the guy's going, but he's just skating around aimlessly. That's how I feel about Ristolainen sometimes.
Yeah, they gave up a lot to get Ristolainen in his contract year. So they were hoping for some untapped potential, but there's just not much there, unfortunately, for a player that I like through the years, but never really had much support in Buffalo. And I guess he's just not what some of us expected from him in terms of his untapped potential. So, yeah, Philly, I think we'll move away from them right now because they only have 3 guys in our top 200 rankings after Cam Atkinson dropped out. So that's unfortunate.
Can we stay in Pennsylvania, Pete?
What's that?
Can we stay in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, let's stay. I mean, obviously it was Crosby versus McDavid last night. Jari took the L. Jari's been great. He's been arguably Pittsburgh's MVP this season. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, McDavid was playing with Hyman last night a little bit, and they connected on a couple of goals. So just as much as we, you know, we're talking up Zach Cassian, that line changes on a daily basis, right? Sometimes they go to Hyman. Sometimes they go to Draisaitl. Sometimes they go to Puljujarvi or Nugent Hopkins or Cassian, but it's tough to put a finger on that. But I think it reminds people to stay patient with like Zach Hyman out there, even when he's on a separate line.
Yeah. And I think like it's a daily purpose of a lot of coaches in this league just to troll the fantasy community. That's why I never put any stock in lines, especially in the preseason. Shout out to our guy, Tyler Johnson in Chicago. Remember that? We're all over him. Don't think so. Zach Hyman was excellent last night. I've ran out of superlatives when trying to describe Connor McDavid. Like, he knows how to seize the moment. He understood it was a big game. Wednesday night hockey, you're playing Sidney Crosby, and he took over the game. And that's just what he does. And then next thing you know, he's right back beside Leon Draisaitl when it comes to the Art Ross conversation. I think at some point in time, he's going to blow by him. But I think you're so right when it comes to Edmonton. That's why I always put, you know, a grain of salt on anybody who's playing with those guys, because Dave Tippett's one of the best at juggling, you know, and whoever is feeling it, that's who he throws up there with Connor McDavid. And every night, it just seems like 2 or 3 points for Connor McDavid. And Zach Hyman, you want to talk about offseason acquisitions, he has to be on a short list of best ones. Like, it's been a really, really good fit so far, hasn't it, Pete?
Yeah, I have Hyman in the same league that I have McDavid in one, and then my points-only league, that's a shallow league, I have Draisaitl. So those guys are just have been incredible. I don't always have those guys on my teams. Can only count a couple of teams on one hand that have had one or both of those guys at any time, but it's a good year to have on one team and one on the other, because they're just absolute clockwork at this point. Are you worried about Crosby, you know, kind of returning to his previous point per game, better than a point per game form at some point this season? I know that Jake Gensel's heating up, but it just seems like that Pittsburgh offense, like something is a little off, you know, somebody's missing at one time or another. Gensel was not this hot all year.
Yeah.
And he missed the early part of the season, and then Crosby was out, and now Brian Rust is out. So, you know, what do you make of Pittsburgh? I know they might get Malkin back sometime soon. He was on the ice the other day, but are you like selling out on Pittsburgh from a fantasy angle in the offense?
Well, I don't want to make excuses, but I think this team has gone through a lot this season, COVID cases, injuries. You know, they haven't had a chance to look at their top six for real. Like you mentioned, Brian Rust out of that lineup. Evgeny Malkin's going to come back, I would think, over the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I'm actually thinking of buying on some stock. Jake Gensel's on an unbelievable point streak right now. The guy's, you know, approaching, you know, superstar status. And you can call me crazy for saying that, but you look at his statistics and you watch him night in and night out and his chemistry with Crosby. It's hard not to root for a guy like Jake Gensel, really coming into his own in this league. Evan Rodriguez is another guy I've been looking at for daily streams, guys. And, you know, he plays alongside those two on the top line. He's playing on the top power play unit. And I'm actually buying low on Chris Letang, because I just have this sneaky suspicion. Pittsburgh, by the way, has lingered around all season long, despite everything against them, injuries and otherwise, and stayed in that conversation that Geno Malkin could come back, be ramped up by the potential of playing in the Olympics, and Pittsburgh could take off. But Tristan Jarry's been an excellent story too. So I'm actually buying some stock on Pittsburgh a bit, and maybe it's just me thinking in the past, but I just can't overlook Sidney Crosby. He's one of the best for a reason. I think he gets back into the conversation here.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I think somebody was asking in the fan questions on Instagram, like to project the Metro Division standings by season's end. I would say that right now, based on Pittsburgh's consistency the past 3 years, even when we've been picking against them, like Pittsburgh is much more likely to finish ahead of the Islanders. Even if the Islanders do turn it around, they don't have the offense like Pittsburgh does. And Pittsburgh sometimes, like Pittsburgh beat Toronto that one game. Exactly. They scored like 7 goals and they didn't have any of those guys. They didn't have Crosby or Malkin or Carter or any of those guys. I saw the other day, Evan Rodriguez had 12 shots on goal in one game. I mean, how insane is that? And sometimes he plays on the third line when these guys are back. Sometimes he plays up top with Crosby. The reason I mentioned Crosby and some concerns, he has 8 points in 11 games this year, which is not too shabby, but he's -8. So that's my concern with Crosby and the overall scope of the team. That said, this team really is looking pretty solid for a playoff berth, I think, to be a wild card team. And I would expect them to be there at this point. I'm done picking against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the regular season, at least. And another team I'm done picking against from a DFS perspective, season long, Nashville Predators. I've been really impressed by that team. They annihilated the Columbus Blue Jackets the other day. Mm-hmm. And Nick, I wanted to ask you, is the line of Philip Forsberg, Mikhail Granlund, and Matt Duchene, is that a top 10 line in the whole league? Because it sure looks like it. They're all better than a point per game this season.
Yeah, it's pretty surreal what that team has done. You know, I think we can intertwine it with, you know, a question we did get about Matt Duchene. Should you fade Matt Duchene? Should you try to trade him right now? Mm-hmm. I think they're onto something. Like, the sample size is getting larger and larger. Even a guy like Ryan Johansson, I think Roman Josi's having a nice bounce back season. And for all that conversation about Ili Tolvanen, like, that's who I was probably pimping the most in the offseason. He's been pretty much irrelevant from a fantasy point of view, and maybe gets cooking later on this season. But you know this, like, I was all over Philip Forsberg in the offseason. It's a contract year. I'm not sure if he's going to stay in Nashville, but regardless, maybe he's a deadline pickup. Maybe Nashville goes on an impeccable run. UC Saros is a big reason why this team is relevant, obviously, this season. But I'm siding with you, and I'm tired of fading this team, because every time I do, I'm wrong. And these guys just having great years. Like Matt Duchene, I watched him a couple weeks back in Vancouver. It was like the Matt Duchene of old, like Matt Duchene Colorado styles. You love to see that. I love those stories in general because it's not talked about a lot, but these guys take a lot of flack in media. And I know they, you know, they get paid lots of money and that's part of the job, but it's always great to see these type of stories. So good on Matt Duchene and good on the Nashville Predators because I thought they were going to stink this season.
And I picked up in one of my deeper leagues, Granlund at one point, yeah. And I think he's reached the must roster territory. He's got like 25 points or something like that. You look at Granlund and Duchene, if you're doing DFS, like I saw in DraftKings, they're still in $5,000 range. So, I mean, that has to be as close to lineup lock every single night until those guys get a little bit more expensive. I wanted to mention that I noticed that about the DFS landscape. People are still sleeping on Nashville. Can't tell you how many times in our picks on NHL.com this year, probably like five times, we've picked the opposing goalie because it's been a road game for Nashville or second of a back-to-back and said, you know, oh, it should be a quote-unquote favorable matchup. It's not a favorable matchup anymore against the Predators. They're going to be in the hunt for the playoffs as they have been each of the past 2 years, even during their steady decline from being one of the elite teams in the league ever since they made that cup final run. But yeah, I think that these guys have been, and Roman Josi as well. Early in the year, I was saying fade Josi based on ADP. Yeah. I was saying Josi can't keep this up and be a top 5-10 defenseman because of the state of the team. But sometimes being a top heavy team, like look at the Bruins. I think they play each other coming up on Thursday night. So look at the Bruins top heavy team, Nashville Predators top heavy team. What's the difference right now? Nashville has an elite goalie and Boston mm-hmm. doesn't, at least until Tuukka Rask comes back. So how crazy is that you could actually say the Predators are looking a little bit better than the Bruins right now?
It's insane, Pete. If I were texting you and we're talking about the Predators goaltending, I would send you like a fire emoji and an eggplant emoji because I'm salivating at the fact that we could see Saros and Askarov as a tandem, right? And we were talking about this 5 years ago, Rene and Saros. And it's like a baton was handed off last year, Rene to Saros, here you go, and you're going to be the next Rene. And he has been so far. Like that's been the prevailing story for me is how long were we waiting in the fantasy community for you, Saros, to arrive? And he's really, really arrived. You know, Finnish goaltending, it speaks for itself. And the Predators are in great hands, not to mention, I don't know if Askarov is going to be a trade asset, but I can't wait to see him in the NHL, man.
Saros, even though he wasn't really the full-time starter until last year, yeah. He has like the best save percentage or second best behind Vasilevsky, something like that, since 2015-16. And he's kept it up this year. So it really is incredible how long we've been talking about Saros as reaching this realm. But I mean, you look at his start volume, you look at his efficiency, now he's translating it and the team around him is scoring goals left and right. Even if you are going to say that they're top heavy, Ryan Johansson has had a glimmer lately. He's worth streaming for exposure to that club. And in the Central Division, there are so many up and down teams, including the Avalanche. So, I mean, you really can pinpoint Nashville as one of the most consistent teams in that division so far, and a team that you want to have a hand in, even though, you know, they don't have Arvidsson anymore. They don't have Ryan Ellis anymore, obviously, but they may be better off for the long term that they did kind of a retool, and maybe they don't have to go into a full on rebuild in Nashville. You never know.
It is early December. Maybe ask me in a couple months. But yeah, I'm fired up about the Nashville Predators. I wanted to get to a couple questions, Pete, that we got to. And a lot of people have been, you know, asking the last couple weeks on a couple files. So I think we should get to them. You talk about Finnish goaltending. Tuukka Rask. You know, as a Jeremy Swayman owner, I knew this in the back of my head. I actually talked to you guys in the preseason saying, hey, should I keep Swayman? I have. It's been so-so. I don't think it was a ringing endorsement the other day by Bruins, you know, management saying, you know, they've been just okay. That's never a good sign and never a good thing to hear. So what are we trying to do here when it comes to Tuukka Rask? What's our feeling? I know the Olympics is around the corner, but I at this point, I would say it's inevitable Tuukka Rask is coming back to Boston, right?
Yeah, I mean, Tuukka Rask is one of the best active goalies in the league, regular season and especially playoffs with his efficiency. He takes some heat over the years, but I think clearly the Bruins miss him. The Bruins miss David Krejci, but Krejci's not coming back. So at least they do have that hope that maybe they could get something done with Rask. The Ullmark signing hasn't really worked out. He's been pretty mediocre. Swayman has been hit or miss. He's had some good outings, and then he's gotten run out of the building a couple of times, including that game against the Rangers the other day. So it's tough. I mean, I had Swayman in one league. I have four goalies in that league. I couldn't afford to keep him anymore because I have Sorokin, Spencer Knight, Elvis, who has been really strong, especially in home games this year. Yeah. And then Jake Ottinger. I couldn't believe Ottinger was still available. So I picked up Ottinger to replace Jeremy Swayman like about a week ago. Haven't looked back from that. Dallas also offers Braden Holtby, who had a vintage performance the other day. So it seems like those are the two goalies in Dallas. I'd rather have either of those guys than the two goalies in Boston right now until Tuukka Rask comes back. They're targeting January, right? That's what we've heard. He's getting into some light workouts here, which is good to see. But if the Boston Bruins are going to make the playoffs, it's probably going to be on the back of Tuukka Rask, not Jeremy Swayman or Linus Ullmark.
I'm just curious, you know, and even as somebody who owns a Boston goaltender, what my plan of action is going to be, because anytime in fantasy hockey and every season and anybody who follows my work, I like to preach patience, but I like to preach, you know, preparation as well. And the fact that, hey, I own Swayman, I own Ullmark, but I know Tuukka Rask is on the periphery and going to come back and probably take that net back. Like, you know, we'll see. He's coming off, you know, pretty serious injury, but he's still Tuukka Rask, in my opinion. And I think he'll get the best opportunity to succeed. So definitely, I think we're both on board. I think we're endorsing maybe if you have the opportunity to move a Swayman, to move an Ullmark, I think you react now, then wait down the road when we know what the Boston Bruins are going to do. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, the problem is with picking up Rask now, like a lot of people are asking about that. But as far as I know in Yahoo leagues, the fact that he's unsigned supersedes the fact that he's injured. So I don't think he's IR eligible. He's listed
has
as not
an IR.
Yeah, he's not active. So that's a problem. If you're in a deeper league and you're over your games limit and you can stash a guy on your bench for a month, then maybe you do that with Tuukka Rask now that we're into early December. It may only be a month from here. So I would do that. Like one league, I could do that if I wanted to.
Exactly.
But Rask is already rostered. So, but that's a strategy you could pursue. I just think that it's going to be tough because of that element fantasy-wise that you can't stash him on IR, that he might be sitting out there. So keep a close eye on Rask if he's available in your league. He's only 13% rostered right now, probably because of that reason.
Exactly.
So you could take the sacrifice for a month if you want to, if he's available in your league.
Yeah, I'm fully behind that too, because I've even had friends approach me like there's no use in just having somebody on your roster for the sake of having them on your roster. And I did mention that ESPN does have him IR eligible, if you can believe it. So if you're in an ESPN league, pick him up. But I think if you're in a Yahoo league, you just a wait and see approach. And Pete, along those lines, you know, a guy who has been a staple in the top 100 for the last couple of years in fantasy hockey, he's now with the Barracuda in the American Hockey League, Evander Kane. I'm a guy who drafted him in both my leagues before the suspension was handed out to start the season. But I think I'm taking a wait and see approach too, because it's similar to Anthony DeAngelo last year. While the player and the agent are looking for a trade, I just don't know how quickly that's going to come to fruition, right?
Right. And the Sharks are playing well right now. Like going into this game against the Islanders, I would say that they are much more likely to win the game. They came in for the big game against Jack Hughes coming back from injury and fresh off the contract extension. And that game wasn't even close. I mean, the way Reimer's playing, the way that top six and the top line in general, like look at some of those guys, right? Like Timo Meier is the best forward on the Sharks this year. We always knew he had that potential. But I think he's taken that next step because Evander Kane isn't there. And overall, the team vibe has been a lot better than the team vibe last season. I know that there were a lot of things working against the Sharks last season, from injuries to that season opening road trip when they weren't playing at home, and maybe some Kane things, maybe not some Kane things. But Certainly, yeah, Evander Kane's really valuable in fantasy for hits. He's dual eligible. He, like Tuukka Rask, is not active, so he's only 29% rostered right now. I just don't know if we're going to see him in the NHL anytime soon. So that's my only concern here, right? Like, you don't know if the Sharks are ever going to call him up, and you don't know if any other team's going to want him. So if he's going to be playing in the minor leagues for most of the season, and there's nothing he could do about that, if that's the way that the Sharks approach this, then we're out of luck looking at any fantasy appeal for Evander Kane.
I can tell you that I do know that the Sharks will not call him back up. I just getting a sense from the players, they're not even trying to make it seem like they want Evander Kane on the team. So that, you know, what team is going to trade for him or, you know, take on that salary? The Sharks are going to have to eat some of that salary. It's a total mess, really, based on just how much money he's making. And let's be honest here, every single stop that Evander Kane has made, there's been a problem. And the Sharks, the players on the Sharks, they're not hiding the fact that they don't want this guy on the team. And he's a game breaker. Kane, if he were to play on the Sharks right now, he's probably the best player on the Sharks. I mean, with all due respect to Logan Couture, he's the best player on the Sharks, and they don't want him on the team. So where's he going to go?
I'm a big chemistry guy too. Like, and Pete, you're right. Like, San Jose has been a nice story. I think the goaltending's been settled down a bit here with James Reimer and Aiden Hill, and they're playing a better system. Like, Erik Karlsson's had a much better season. I just don't know if, you know, they envision themselves getting involved in that anymore. And that's why they're looking, they're willing to take 50% salary in this trade. I'm just not sold, as mentioned, that it's going to happen anytime soon. I know people have been bullish on the Kane file, and I get it from a hockey point of view, tremendous file. But I just don't know how quickly he's going to be back in the NHL.
Right. And yeah, you mentioned Erik Karlsson. He's up to 12 points in 16 games. So bounce back season, 1 year late. We thought that might happen last year, but maybe still was dealing with the nagging injury, or the hamstring wasn't the same, or the Achilles, whatever it was. Clean slate here. He's looked a lot better outside of being on COVID protocol for a little bit. Even since he's come back, he's looked pretty electric. I know that a lot of advanced metrics are on his side, so that's really good to see. In terms of teams out there that, you know, I know like Vancouver has been like in rumors to make a move or something to spark that team. They have had a couple of wins lately, Pettersson points in consecutive games. I know we've been harsh on him, but of course, still, you could always look at that player. We were always so high on him. If he starts to turn it around, it could only take 1 week before he's back close to the top 50 overall players in the league. Are you buying low on Elias Pettersson and or Brock Besser for the Canucks right now?
Well, shout out to JT Miller first for that Connor McDavid-esque goal last night. They beat Montreal. They beat Ottawa. Kudos. I'm buying low on EP. I love EP. I drafted him in one of my leagues this season. I just don't think, like, this is the lowest he can get, right? Like, I think he has, what, 3 points in the last 10 games. I feel like he's hit the lowest point in his season. And there's a reason why he got that money. Granted, he's coming off the injury. I'm going to give him a bit more time. I know people are a little annoyed and agitated if they do own Elias Pettersson, but I think now is a perfect time. It's an absolutely perfect time to buy in some Canucks stock, Besser, Pettersson. I just don't think this team could be as bad as they've shown early on this season, Pete.
And they do have, I mean, we've been hard on Demko as well, but it's not his fault. I mean, I think he's third in the league in saves in terms of the volume this year.
Carter Hart in the West, right?
Yeah. I mean, and that's what I've been asking myself a lot. Like right now, we expected the Islanders to make the playoffs, and a lot of us expected the Vancouver Canucks to make the playoffs. Which team is more likely to turn it around? I find myself saying the Islanders, but there's so much more fantasy appeal in the offense of the Canucks. So it's a very complicated question. I think real life futures appeal, I would say the Islanders. But again, the Canucks are the more exciting offensive group that you could actually find some buy low fantasy appeal here.
Let's get to Winnipeg, and then maybe we'll touch on some betting plays for tonight if you want. You know, I get a lot of questions about the Winnipeg Jets, and there's a lot of people out there who drafted Blake Wheeler rather high, Mark Scheifele rather high. Pierre-Luc Dubois has been quieter as of late. I don't know how you feel about this team, but I'm still buying low on the Winnipeg Jets. Like, I think there's going to come a point in this season where they awaken Last I checked, they're still in a playoff spot. It's been a turbulent start. You know, like most teams, injuries have played a factor. COVID's played a factor. You know, where do you sit when it comes to Winnipeg? Because I'm still certainly buying, even if it's Blake Wheeler, who's really, really struggled to start the year.
Right. Blake Wheeler, no goals on 39 shots in 17 games this season. I know he's older. He is definitely a tried and true fantasy asset over the years. I would expect him to turn it around to some extent. That said, I know that he has been kind of like an anchor on his line. I know for a while he was playing on the third line. Then he's back up top with Scheifele. Maybe he just doesn't have the same caliber of offensive game anymore. Yeah. That could be the case with Blake Wheeler. So I'm a little more worried about Wheeler than I am about Nikolaj Ehlers and Mark Scheifele. I saw somebody, some people are saying, should I drop Scheifele? No, you should not drop Scheifele. Should you sell low on Scheifele? There's no point of that. I saw someone got Zibanejad back for Scheifele in a couple of player team deal. I would do that in a heartbeat and cut my losses on Scheifele. But in general, if you're seeing low ball offers out there for those guys, definitely take advantage, because Winnipeg is a high octane offense. I do think a guy like Ehlers is going to get going, especially if they play in the Olympics and he's out there for Denmark. Like, he's going to be rejuvenated at some point this season around that game going on. So, yeah, I love Ehlers. I love Scheifele. I would not cut the cord on either of those guys. But it is crazy that Dubois has outperformed both of them so far.
How are we feeling about Dubois? Like, it's been a good start. As of late, Pete, it's been a bit more quieter. And I think we're expecting guys like Ehlers to pick up their play. So what would you do with Dubois right now?
I think he's a sell high candidate. I mean, he's still very young, 23 years old. We knew he had this type of upside from the playoffs 2 years ago with Columbus. It was a high draft pick, number 3 overall in 2016. So the pedigree is there. But I just think that his explosion here is hand in hand with him playing with Kyle Connor. If that changes at some point for the rest of the season, that could really hurt his ceiling for the rest of the year. So, yeah, 18 points in 22 games. You could have gotten Pierre-Luc Dubois really, really late in your fantasy draft, maybe even off the waiver wire in some standard leagues. But I think it's an opportunity to capitalize right now. So even though Dubois is so much better, you still see him right in that range of Dubois, in the same range as Scheifele and Ehlers. And honestly, if I had Dubois, I might consider that move, especially if there were other players involved. Maybe not straight up for Scheifele and Ehlers, but if you can get one of them back and then also something else in return, I would do that for PLD.
Yeah, not to mention Connor Hellebuyck. If you want to call this a buy low window, yes, you should buy, because he's one of the better goaltenders in this league.
He is.
Why don't we get to some of the plays for tonight? I know Bob's been champing at the bit here. So, Bobby, hit me with something that's actually going to work. Throw a hammer or something.
Well, we haven't done enough of this year, and we know it's Thursday, and, you know, we try to build these podcasts so you can listen to them Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Well, but there's a gem out there that I personally like. I don't think Peter likes it. I don't think anyone's going to like it, but I'm just basing it off on the line. The fact that the Islanders are favored against the Sharks after this long layoff, like, you know, all the issues surrounding the Islanders, I am gonna back up the truck and hammer the Islanders tonight at home. They're -125 favorites, and I just think that that's a fishy line. They're begging you to take the Sharks. Everyone's out on the Islanders. Barry Trotz has had, you know, the last week or so rallying the troops. You know, they've had this layoff. Everything has gone wrong. I think this pause kind of helps them a little bit, and I think Sorokin in between the pipes is going to have a gem tonight. Give me the Islanders, and I know our pal Michael Lieboff loves the play also, so I'll tip my cap to Lieboff. I like the Islanders tonight against the Sharks.
Wow. Pete, you got a rebuttal to that.
That's a good one. I think that's possible. I think it's either going to go one or two ways. Like, either the Islanders will win or they'll get completely blown out because they haven't played a couple games here. And, you know, the Sharks are rolling, like we said. So a bit risky, but I like the confidence in the bounce back appeal under Trotz. Did want to mention that even though Anders Lee and Josh Bailey will probably be back, it sounds like, you know, Brock Nelson, Ryan Pulock, two key contributors to that team, are still going to be out for a number of weeks. So I do worry about that for New York's bounce back appeal, at least in the short term. But yes, Sorokin has been amazing. With how bad that team is, the fact that he's still a top 10 fantasy goalie, not only based on performance, but also based on rest of season rankings, speaks to our confidence in him. But yeah, there's just not a lot of fantasy appeal on the island. People were actually asking, and I don't blame them for doing so, Nick, should I drop Matthew Barzal? And we dropped him out of the top 100 forward rankings this week for fantasy. And you know why we did it? Because the guys at 99 and 100, like Tage Thompson, Tage Thompson has doubled the points of Barzal this season. So how can you even argue against that?
No, and you know, it's been a rocky relationship between yours truly and Isles fans over the years. I've got these questions a lot about Matthew Barzal. I have to believe in the process. My general rule of thumb, by the way, when it comes to waivers, if I'm dropping somebody, there has to be somebody who's significantly better with long-term value. I'm not dropping Matthew Barzal to get 2 weeks out of Tage Thompson. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I like the long-term value on like a Tage Thompson, but I can't drop him to take a flyer on somebody, right? Like, it's got to be somebody prolific with value and with name status, or I'm holding on to Matthew Barzal, because I find oftentimes, Pete, I don't know about you, the moves I don't make usually, you know, benefit me the most in fantasy hockey. So I'm going to preach patience on Barzal.
Yeah, Barzal was one of my fades based on ADP, but I still would have a hard time dropping him. I agree. Mm-hmm. If you're asking me, would I drop like Tyler Seguin, who hasn't been the same player for a few years now, has dealt with injuries, hasn't been the same. I would drop Tyler Seguin without thinking twice because of all the things I've seen. I still see Barzal being one of the elite zone entry guys in the league. Yeah. I know that it doesn't always translate to the power play, and I know that his line mates are not that great, especially after losing Eberle in the offseason, but still, you have that level of trust with the player in Barzal as opposed to maybe a Seguin, just for comparison's sake, at the center position.
All right, real quick, a couple picks from each of you. We'll put a bow on it. We'll say goodbye. Mm-hmm. Let's start with, we'll toss the coin up. It lands on Nicholas. Nicholas, a few plays for tonight.
I got a lot, but like, I'm not confident about some of them. Daryl Sutter returning to Staples Center. I think they're calling it the crypto, whatever center in 2 weeks or whatever, but I like Calgary. I got to go with Calgary. Daryl Sutter wants some revenge. I love that angle, guys. You know it. Give me the Tampa Bay money line tonight. So they lost in St. Louis. They blew that lead the other night in the shootout, which, by the way, I had money on the Blues, so I felt great about life. So I like Tampa to bounce back. Vasilevsky's playing. I think Stamkos will be back in that lineup tonight. So give me the Tampa money line and give me the Colorado puck line. I tweeted this out on Wednesday night. I felt bad for the Montreal Canadiens, who, by the way, had a couple more guys go on the COVID list, including Brendan Gallagher, that they're going to have to deal with the wrath of a pissed off Nathan MacKinnon and the Colorado Avalanche, regardless of who they play. They can play the organist in between the pipes. I think they're going to win this game by more than 1.5.
I think the Nashville Predators are hammer against the Boston Bruins right now. Those teams are trending in different directions. We talked about all the things we liked about those. I mean, I think Nashville is one of my biggest surprises of the season. And yeah, the goalie situation's not helping them. If they're going to be facing that big four in Nashville, offensively speaking, that's a problem. It could get ugly once again, like it was against Columbus. And Columbus is a good team this year. So the fact that that happened was really eye-opening for me. I'm in on the Nashville Predators, at least in the short term, to keep this rolling. And then, yeah, I like that storyline with Calgary returning to, you know, face his former team, Sutter's former team. I think Sutter is like a coach of the year favorite right now. When you look at how the top guys in Calgary have performed, Johnny Gaudreau climbing the fantasy rankings every week, Jacob Markstrom's a Vezina candidate, the defenseman there, from Anderson to Shillington to Noah Hanifin, they've been relevant early and often this season. And Elias Lindholm's been amazing for them too. So yeah, I think like Calgary seems like one of those teams that we're kind of middling on in the preseason, but they're just like, they might crowd up on some of these awards leaderboards as the season rolls on.
Yeah, I might etch out, piece in the paper in Calgary and voice my apology to the staff there for ripping on them all season long. Off season long, Zadorov, Brad Richardson, Dan Vladar, these guys have all been golden. So good on Calgary. Contract year, Johnny Gaudreau and company. And Sean Monahan's been quiet. That's been the biggest shocker for me.
And one other, actually DFS play, but keep an eye on it in all formats. Robert Thomas. Playing really well for the St. Louis Blues. I know that offense is crowded, but right now he's playing with Buchnevich and Tarasenko on the second line. Thomas, 20 points in 22 games. Roll him out in DFS. He's still dirt cheap. I loved what I saw from like Perunovich the other day. He had one assist, nearly had another. These are some value guys on the St. Louis Blues offense that I think deserve to be mentioned. The Blues offense, second in power play percentage, seventh in goals per game. Clearly one of the deepest offenses in the land right now.
Yeah, and I'll leave on this. Like, I'm really feeling the St. Louis Blues this season, guys. Pete, like, the depth is uncanny. Perunovic has looked excellent. Even a guy like Logan Brown gets called up. You know, Neighbors. Like, there's so many young prospects they have that they've injected into that lineup. Binnington's been much better. Ville Husso's been much better behind him. I think in general, they're a team that's, you know, a lot of people are sleeping on, but I like the fact that some of these kids have taken that next step, right? Kyrou's been outstanding, and so has Robert Thomas. Tarasenko still wants out, but Tarasenko returning to form, I still cannot get over. I never probably will get over the fact that he could have been in Seattle, but he's not.
I know it's unfortunate in hindsight. A lot of people at the time were thinking it would have been a great fit and would have been a better fit than, you know, spending up for Carey Price or anything like that, or going kind of like the route that they did, but they certainly regret that in hindsight, I would say. And the Blues have been, I was worried about Binnington. I was worried about Torrey Krug a little bit and Vince Dunn leaving, but the injection of Perunovic. Perunovic might be on power play one in a matter of weeks over Torrey Krug with how Krug is underachieving. So if you want to stay ahead of the curve, pick up Perunovic. If he's up there, he might be. He looks like a great puck mover. And of course, that's the strong suit of Torrey Krug's game. So if you're a Torrey Krug owner in fantasy, you might want to do a little handcuff there if Perunovic is still out there for sure. But thanks for hopping on, Nick. Appreciate it, man.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Thank you, Nicholas. Quick plug for the other podcast, because this is what we do here. The Chirp with Darren Millar. Darren Pang jumps on, tells some great stories, goes around the league. NHL at the Rink. Dave Stubbs comes on to talk Montreal. He knows Montreal inside and out, a Montreal historian, knows the market. So listen to Dan Rosen, Sean Rourke, and Dave Stubbs on NHL at the Rink. Petey put a bow on it, and thanks again, Nick.
Follow Nick at the Golden Muzzy on Twitter. Follow his work at Sportsnet, and he hops on the show here. We always appreciate that. So for Nick Alberga, Bob Bender, Pete Jensen, we'll talk to you next week for Week 9 Fantasy Waiver Wire Pickups with James Harding. See you on the other side. Thanks for listening.